back here on WEEI Afternoons. Talking to a lot of Patriots today. We'll talk to Mark Schlereth momentarily. We'll talk to Brian Hoyer in about an hour. Ted Johnson will join us. We'll have a little TED Talk breaking down the win over the Dolphins and what some of those things mean for the postseason. But before we get to Stink, let's go to the phone line, 617-779-7937. Let's go to Jack in Beckett. What's up, Jack?
Hey, guys. Thank you so much for taking my call. You know, I'm just I hear a lot of talk out there about numbers, and I just wanted to point out that we are in a 17-game season now, are we not?
Yes.
So I think that as you start to see more elevated numbers, you got to take that into account, that we can't just create these historical comparisons and start saying, oh, this guy is so much better than that guy, you know, because I think it matters, you know, that extra game.
Absolutely, Jack, and that's actually something that Michael Strahan brought up on TV when he said, I still hold the 16-game sack record, and now Miles Garrett holds the 17-game sack record, and you go back to the old 14-game records and 2,000 yards and OJ.
But Strahan also got a freebie from Favre, so did he admit to that on the air?
Yeah, there's a lot there, so that's definitely a consideration, but let's go to the phone lines now, where we are joined by Mark Schlereth, the Odyssey NFL Insider, is the host of the Stinkin' Truth podcast. Listen to the Stinkin' Truth podcast now on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. And he is brought to you by Nationwide for your insurance and financial needs. Nationwide is on your side. Mr. Schlereth, how are we this week? How are the holidays?
The holidays were good. We're doing great this week. By the way, I just wanted to jump in on your conversation really quick because let me just, I just want to throw some Myles Garrett stuff out there. Would it make a difference if that texter knew or that phone caller knew that that Myles Garrett did it in 100 less snaps than T.J. Watt?
Good question.
Forget about 17 games, but 100 less snaps. As a matter of fact, he had the fewest passing snaps of any of the people that you would mention. Reggie White, Michael Strahan, T.J. Watt, Mark Gastineau. He had less pass attempting snaps than any of those guys in setting the record. So to me, the 17 games is irrelevant. You did less snaps than any other person ever did it. And then, by the way, in today's NFL, when I was playing, the bubble screen didn't get invented until the late 90s. We sat and dropped back seven-step drops all the time. In today's game, your legit opportunity to rush the passer is limited with all the three-step drops, the five-step drops, balls out underneath. It's all east and west. There's no real pushing the ball down the football field like it used to be. And so your legitimate opportunities to actually rush the passer, even though you're throwing a pass, but legitimate opportunities to rush the passer are limited to 10 or 12 a game. Like, what he has done to me is one of the most remarkable things I've ever seen. And then on top of that, you're the Cleveland freaking Browns. You should be relegated into, you know, the SEC. So, you know, the fact that you have no offensive ability. So as an offense, you're sitting there going, why would we throw the ball on third down and long? Or why we're not going to risk? We're going to throw it short of the sticks. And if we break a tackle, we'll get a first down. Or we're going to throw something that doesn't require us to drop back and sit and hold the football. Because we only need to score 17 to beat this crappy team. So there is another layer that makes this record incredible. So, you know, look beyond the 17 games, what really goes on in today's NFL, and you'll find that that record is incredible.
Stink, I just wanted to ask, do you think he should share part of it with the Patriots since he got 5.5 sacks against Drake May?
Yeah, you know what? He should give it should be a footnote on there that, hey, if it wasn't for the Patriots, we always joked around. There was a guy by the name of Michael Schofield who played for the Broncos who gave up 5 sacks to Khalil Mack, single-handedly sent him to the Hall of Fame. So, those things unfortunately happen occasionally. But anyhow, I just think what Miles did was pretty flippin' incredible.
Absolutely, and I think your perspective as an offensive lineman kind of brings some credibility to that, being on the other side of the ball. I didn't expect we'd start there, but, you know, love the passion and energy and live radio. But let's go to the MVP award. I'm guessing you have a passionate feeling on that. It's one of the big topics around the NFL right now. Is Drake May worthy of it? Yes, everybody knows that. Is he going to win it? Is it going to be a lifetime achievement award for Matthew Stafford? Who do you think is going to win the MVP?
I think it'll be Matthew Stafford. But I think what you just said was a lifetime achievement award. You know, yardage wise, leading in yardage, leading in touchdowns, all those things, and just the history that he has had. So I think it'll be a lifetime achievement award. Again, I look at and this is going to tell you something about me, I suppose. I hate the Heisman. I hate the MVP because it always just goes to quarterbacks. And I look at, like, quarterbacks wear pink jerseys in practice. They're not allowed to be hit anymore. You know, like okay, they get all the girls. They get all the money. They get all the endorsements. They get all the opportunities after they're done. Can we just start? It's like MVP should go to football players. Guys who actually play football, hit each other, you know, those type of things. We give them some special quarterback award at the end of the year. Hey, the best quarterback of the year was, you know, blah, 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 whatever. But it's just another, just another thing that irritates me about football and the Heisman in general. And then we always sit there and say, oh my God, they have such a tough job. Do they really, you know, like, hey, on this read, you know, it's a high, low read. If the safety plays on the over, throw the post. If the safety plays deep over the post, throw the over. Ooh, how are we going to figure that out? Oh, it's so complicated. So, you know, and I just am like, let's slow down on this a little bit. And give it to a real football player.
You were rolling, so I didn't want to stop you mid-rant, but do some teams really use pink jerseys for the – I've seen red. I think I've seen yellow, maybe even a green. Yeah. Do some teams actually use pink?
Well, they all use red, but over the course of the season, if you go to practice on Fridays, the red just kind of continues to bleach out, and at the end of the year, they're all pink. And so – you know, that's my story, and I'm sticking with it.
All right, so obviously things change drastically when you get into the tournament. We're talking single elimination. You played in a whole hell of a lot of those in your career. How much does the intensity crank up? How much does the anxiety crank up? You know, how much harder do people hit? How much more does it hurt? And how much more are you willing to take and give, knowing your career, or at least that season, is on the line?
Yeah, you know, the intensity ratchets it up just because it's the playoffs. But once you kick off and you get the first hit in, it's just a football game. It's like, it's not like all of a sudden guys are like, okay, let's ratchet up the contact. Let's ratchet. That doesn't happen. It's the same damn game you always play. I always look at it like it's the team that can settle in and not have the enormity of the situation overwhelm them. It's the team that can focus during the week and doesn't get distracted with all the extra media attention and all the extra attention that, you know, that your fan base pays you and all those things. That's the challenge to me. Once the ball's kicked off, you know, you're just playing football. It's not really any different. Like I got to play in three Super Bowls and start in three Super Bowls. You know, once you got through the national anthem, once that kickoff happened, once you got that first contact in, I never once thought about during the course of that game, man, this is the Super Bowl. I better give some extra effort on this play. I give the same amount of effort on every play that I play. So it just that part is a little bit of nonsense, but I understand where teams can get a little bit overwhelmed in their preparation and make it something that it's not. And I think that becomes the real key.
Insider calls are brought to you by Nationwide for your insurance and financial needs. Nationwide is on your side. So, Mark, your Broncos are off this week. They are the number one seed. And the Patriots team that I know you've covered a couple times and you really seem to enjoy the way they play under Vrabel's the two seed. I was watching social media and Manti Te'o said the Patriots are the most well-rounded team or best all-around team in the playoffs in the AFC. Do you agree with that?
No, I don't. I think the Patriots are really good. I think the team that is playing the best football overall right now over the last 4 or 5 weeks is probably the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Oh.
And I think the Patriots are playing really good. Like I have, like, you know, we live in Denver, you know, and I do a daily radio show in Denver, and you know, and you, people are a little bit, you know, butthurt that, oh, they have one score games and this, that, and the other. And, you know, people are like, we're getting disrespected. And the old Broncos players call themselves the overdogs because they're always, you know, an underdog. And so it's become this little thing. But man, they make way too many mistakes. Offensively, the lack of execution is concerning to me. It's a really concerning thing to be a number one seed. And you know, we even talked about it on our radio show. Are they, you know, arguably one of the worst number one seeds that we've ever seen? You know, all the one score games and all that stuff. And you know, it's very much like it, you guys had Tebow play for you and Tebow played for us. And I was like, you cannot be considered a hero, you know, for putting out a fire that you lit. Like, you know, you're the arsonist and you're the fire department. Like, it just, like, you can't. And if you're playing, you know, really average or below average football for three quarters and all of a sudden you turn it on the fourth quarter, hey, there's something to be said about your ability to get it done in the fourth quarter. But, you know, your inability to do things through three quarters and the mistakes you make have me very concerned, especially on the offensive side of the ball. So, you know, I come into this, I'm excited the Broncos are the number one seed, but I have trepidation just about the way they've played, especially down the stretch here.
So, obviously, you're familiar with the Los Angeles Chargers being in the AFC West and rooting for and talking about the Broncos so much. What can the New England Patriots and what can Patriots fans expect from a Jim Harbaugh-coached, Justin Herbert-led Chargers team?
Well, I mean, they're always going to try to establish the run, establish the play action pass. They're not very good up front, so they give up a lot of pressures, a lot of hits. But Justin Herbert is exceptional. I think the biggest thing is defensively, you know, they're very tied together. They do a really good job, and I just kind of broke them down this week with all their backups. I mean, the Broncos, there's number 58, whoever that is for the Chargers. He's a linebacker that played special teams, never took one snap of defense this year. We try to send him to the Pro Bowl. We're like, hey, if anybody needs a Pro Bowl alternate linebacker, we're not going to block him all day long. So you might want to look at this guy. I mean, it was unbelievable. But I thought from a schematic standpoint, I thought the Chargers just absolutely crushed the Broncos from a schematic standpoint of attacking protections, finding ways to get free rushers. They did a phenomenal job in that. And I think defensively, they're a really good football team. They're going to keep that depleted offense. They're going to keep that depleted offense in the game. So that's where they're really strong, is on the defensive side of the ball. Like I said, attacking protections, and being just really sound defensively with their principles. So I think that's where the biggest challenge will be. But offensively, their offensive line has been just decimated by injuries.
So before we let you go, if I can I ask for a prediction for Patriots and Chargers Sunday night at Gillette Stadium, Herbert versus May?
Oh yeah, I think the New England Patriots are a much better team. So I think I'll take the Patriots. Let's call it 27-16.
Ooh, I like it. A relatively comfortable win for Drake May in his first career playoff start. I like it. All right, Mark, enjoy the weekend, which starts actually on Thursday if you care about college football, and goes straight through Monday, the NFL playoffs. Enjoy the football this week. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good, guys. Do well.
Thanks, Mark.
Thanks, Mark.
That was Odyssey NFL Insider Mark Schlereth, host of the Stinkin' Truth podcast. Insider calls are brought to you by Nationwide for your insurance and financial needs. Nationwide is on your side. Remember to listen to the Stinkin' Truth podcast on Spotify or Apple Podcasts.